are listening to Wells Tech, episode 615, recorded on Tuesday, November 19th, 2019. Bitmoji all around. Wells Tech is a weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is a part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Today on the show, we are joined by Jason Schmidt to talk about a white paper put out by Google Future of the Classroom, specifically connecting guardians and schools, how to make that connection between parents and kids and classrooms and just kind of improving communications all around. Talk about a cool tool called Seesaw. We've talked about it before, but I think you might be interested in what Jason has to say about it. We discuss Bitmoji in a little bit more detail, and we share our own. If you've got some, we'll be interested in seeing yours too. Tips and picks of the week, ministry resources, community feedback, the whole shoot and match. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Wells Tech, everybody. Episode 615. We're recording this on Tuesday, November 19th. I'm Martin Spriggs. This is a show about technology and ministry. As I mentioned, we've been doing this for 615 times, and almost every one of those, either Sally or myself, have been actually every one of those. One of us has been on the show. In fact, most of them, both of us have been on the show. Welcome back to the show, Sally. How are you?
I am great, Martin. Looking forward to Thanksgiving, which is looming on the calendar. Yes. The latest Thanksgiving that's happened in a long, long time.
And so. It seems like it's even later because there's been snow on the ground for for 2 weeks here.
I'm counting on no snow for Thanksgiving because I'm going south, and I'm looking forward to that.
It is, yeah, that I'm very envious. It's really eerie to have this much snow and this cold and still have leaves on many of the trees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, poor trees. So we mentioned the number of shows we've done. A number of those shows we've been joined by our guest today, Jason Schmidt. Hey, Jason.
Hey, Martin. Hey, Sally. Thanks for having me on again.
Jason, you're experiencing the early winter as well, so
yeah.
welcome to Wisconsin for Jason.
I kind of knew what I was getting myself into when I came back, so.
That's right. You know, how are things going up, town are you living in?
We're just outside of Green Bay, and then I work in Oconto Falls, which is another half hour north of there, so.
Okay.
Things are going great. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, you know, getting to know new people and new church home and, new work home and everything like that. And everybody's kind of just been settled in. It's been working out real great.
Remind our listeners what you do there.
I'm the instructional technology coach for Oconto Falls. So, I work primarily with teachers and, tech integration and, instructional coaching and try to figure out the best way to make the use of the tools that we have available to have the biggest impact on kids. So it's been a lot of fun.
So are there other people in your position or are you kind of a lone ranger? Do you have somebody to talk to?
I'm the only person in my position in my district, but there are plenty of other people nearby who have a similar role. So I have a pretty good network of people to work with and talk to.
You know, Jason, what you do probably didn't exist maybe even 5 years ago. They probably didn't have an instructional technology coach or in your district or whatever. And that ties right into kind of our discussion topic of the day, where Google took a look at the future and specifically how teachers are preparing students for careers and challenges that don't even exist yet and what kind of trends we should be aware of so that we can do that well. So, yeah, there were, eight topics, I think, that were part of the Google Future of the Classroom white paper, as it were. Things like digital responsibility, computational thinking, innovating pedagogy, student-led learning, that kind of thing. And just looking at trends and things and ways that teachers can be more prepared to assist their students for these jobs of the future.
Yeah, you know, I thought that the article itself has some really interesting information and lots of things that tie in, you know, pretty closely with the kind of work that I'm doing on a regular basis up here. With all of the changes around pedagogy and, you know, how we interact with kids and things like that. And I know as we were getting ready to do this podcast, you know, we were talking about just the whole idea of how do you connect guardians and schools and families and you know, keep those lines of communication open. And that one, you know, as we were kind of talking through all of this stuff, that one really resonated with me anyways, because that's a topic that we're dealing with on a pretty consistent basis up here. Try and, you know, connect to guardians and get families involved with the things that are going on in school, because that's one of those key indicators of success, you know, how you know you're doing a really good job. And that's, you know, a really important aspect that we've been emphasizing a lot around here.
So what are some of the challenges around doing that? There, as times have changed, obviously the challenge maybe has changed too, but now we have some technology at our disposal. What are the things that you have to kind of think about as you're trying to increase that engagement and connect these guardians to the schools?
Yeah, you know, the one of the biggest issues that we've run into is we're inundated with so much information just in our society in general, right? You know, there's Facebook, there's text messages, we get, you know, stuff coming in on Twitter, we've got media on the TV, you know, and, you know, push notifications are coming to our, you know, to our phones for, you know, YouTube or, you know, pretty much anything that any app that we have, you know, we're getting this information coming in. So, you know, in an information rich or information overload society, you know, how do you get it so that people pay attention? You know, and that's a really big challenge. We have an additionally, you know, part of that too is, we have to, if you want to send text messages to people, they have to opt in. You can't just sign them up and, you know, and just have them, you know, get the information. They've got to say, give you their consent basically to accept those messages. And, that can be pretty challenging. You know, especially if you're getting, you know, parents that maybe, you know, sadly just don't care or, you know, don't have the means to connect, or they don't understand, you know, what it is that they would receive by opting in. So, you know, all of these challenges that we have with communication, just kind of compound each other, and make for a perfect storm in some circumstances where, you know, you just kind of got to start eating the elephant and, you know, chew a little bit, and then, okay, here's a little success. Let's move on to the next little thing and keep on building on those.
So are we talking about parent-to-teacher communications? Are we talking about administration-to-parent communications, all of the above? What exact lines of communication are we trying to connect and keep open here?
Well, the biggest thing, because if a parent needs to get a hold of somebody at the school or administration or something, you know, that contact information is out there and they'll reach out. It has more to do with trying to make that classroom connection. So, you know, for teachers to get a hold of parents, or even, you know, sharing what kids are doing in the classroom with parents is becoming increasingly important, so that, you know, we can, parents want to be able to, you know, we want to be able to feel involved and know what's going on, and, you know, be able to talk to our kids about what's going on, or, you know, things like that. So, you know, really, and the other kind of challenge that we're running into is parents don't check email, you know, and that's
just gonna ask, isn't it? Can't we just send an email to everybody anymore?
Oh yeah, we sure can. I know that happens to me. I get an email probably every day, multiple times a day from my kids' schools, and I guarantee I'm not reading them. You know, just because that's the last thing I, you know, email is work. And you know, if I get an email, for something personally or something that's going on in the kids' rooms, I'm not checking it, because I'm just going to assume that everything is, you know, it's something that, is maybe not super important. If it was important, they'd get a hold of me another way. So, you know, that to me is a big challenge. So, you know, we've got to try to find alternate ways or incentivize parents to get in there and to sign up so that we know that they're, getting the information that we want to get them. And that's kind of led to a little bit of a change in strategy for the way our elementary schools are working. We signed up for Seesaw for Schools, and, what that does is that is, it's much less text centric, like an email would be. And it's a lot more about giving a window into the classroom. So, you know, taking pictures of activities or posting student work and sharing that with parents and those kinds of things. So there's a little bit more of a draw and incentive for parents to sign up for something like that. And we've been seeing some pretty good success, with increasing our communication, out with parents through that means. That's been a fun thing.
So what's that experience like on the parent side or the guardian side? Is that an app? Is that a website? Are there notifications? How are they drawn in? How has this become a little bit more immersive than email might be?
So it's all of the above, Martin. you know, they can, and that's part of the draw for it for us. That's been kind of successful is, you know, parents have options. So, you know, if they prefer to do it through email, then they can sign up for it through email. If they want to get through text messaging, then they can sign up for updates through text messaging, or they can install the app and get everything there and get push notifications. So it just kind of depends on how they want to do it. You know, the parents who want to get it, will sign up for it. And then, you know, we have real high percentage of parents who participate in parent-teacher conferences. So, you know, we wrangled them in then, and we've got pretty close to 100% of our parents signed up and connected to their kids. So now they're getting that information in one way or the other. But it's really nice to have that because, unlike with email, you know, I know there are things that you can do with email where you can see your click-through and all of that kind of stuff, but it takes a little bit more to set something like that up. But with Seesaw, you know, we can see exactly who has seen what message when, you know, we get a lot more analytics on it, and that makes things a lot easier on our end because now we have a way to follow up and, you know, we know what information people have and what they're not.
So one elephant in the room that we haven't really touched on is just the whole security around this. You know, you don't want parent X to see child Y's stuff. You've got to hook up the right parents mm-hmm. with the right students and things. And I would assume you have a confidence level by using a tool like Seesaw that security is being handled in the highest quality or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. You know, with something like Seesaw, and it's kind of a blessing and a curse at the same time, you know, because just like with any service that's worth its salt, we can't sign them up for Seesaw. They have to opt in. So when teachers are, you know, they set up their classrooms at the beginning of the year, we've got kids in there and stuff like that. They send a QR code home with each kid. And that QR code has a unique link that attaches that kid to whatever account gets signed in with. So, and then parents only see stuff that their child is tagged in. So, you know, if there's, you know, Sally and Martin are working together on a project and they both get tagged, then, you know, both of your parents get to see, the things that you are doing. But, you know, if it's just a Sally independent project and she's the only one that's tagged in it, then Martin's parents don't see those. So, you know, the privacy on it is, pretty powerful and, works out pretty, you know, it's been a pretty successful tool for us, you know, to keep that content out there and get it out to parents, but at the same time, being safe and secure and making sure that doesn't get into places where, you know, it doesn't belong necessarily.
So that sign up process is really critical. I mean, I would think a software company could kind of be made or broken right there at that point if people don't want to sign up or can't get through the process. And
yep.
Sounds like they make it really simple if they generate unique QR codes and all that kind of stuff for the kids.
Yeah, it's pretty user-friendly.
So are you finding that all parents have access to the technology necessary? That's not a concern anymore?
They don't all have home internet. You know, our district is pretty rural. We cover 10 zip codes, and, you know, 90% of our population lives in about 5% of the area. So you know, that part of it is gets to be a little bit challenging, I think. But, you know, for the, by and large, almost everybody has a cell phone. And those who don't have a cell phone have an email address, and, you know, they're checking in on these things on a pretty regular basis. So, you know, we haven't run into that as much of a barrier. You know, we found that if it's important to them, then they figure out a way to make it happen. So, you know, that's you got to kind of trust your users to a certain extent.
So I'm sorry. In your district, Jason, good. Does the Seesaw initiative exist collaboratively with a normal old school newsletter? Do you send home paper with the kids anymore?
Nope. Paper doesn't go home with the kids anymore. It all goes home through Seesaw. So, you know, teachers will PDF it and then they put it in Seesaw and it gets sent out to the parents that way.
Now, Seesaw is not your student information system.
Plenty.
It is really just your communication system.
Right. Yeah. Seesaw is just a platform for communication and connecting with parents. It can also be used for things like, you know, keeping track of student work and portfolios and standards and that kind of stuff. We're not there yet, but it's in the works. Hopefully we can get that going and, you know, tap into some of the more advanced and powerful features of Seesaw that, really kind of separate it out from all the other stuff that's out there.
Very good. Well, sounds exciting. You are using this at the elementary level currently in your school district, and mm-hmm. we'll be curious to check back with you and see how all those almost 100% opt-in parents are feeling about it by the end of the school year.
Is this the first year for this?
For Seesaw for Schools, yeah. They've been using the free version for a little while, you know, because there are two different, you know, with any tool like this, there are always tiers. So this is the first year that we've paid for it, and it's been going really well. I think we'll keep it up.
Awesome.
So is this your idea? Are you on the hook for this?
Nope. No, well, I'm off the hook for everything, Martin. I get to play the new guy card for at least the next 6 years.
That's right. I do have to say there probably aren't many kids named Martin or Sally in your school.
Right.
Sally, Dick, and Jane, maybe.
There are a couple. We've got a few.
All right.
We did talk with Kurt Gosdick and Stephanie Cron back in the spring, I believe, back in March. They did a presentation at EdTech Lead on Seesaw, so we're going to throw a link to that in the show notes if you want to learn more about student-driven portfolio angle. That's what their presentation was on at EdTech Lead this summer.
Very good. Shall we move on? The next segment of our show is entitled News in Tech. And the news in tech that maybe is worth sharing for some, those of you that are Apple lovers, there's a new MacBook Pro out, and it's a 16-inch version, which is long ago. Some of you probably remember that there was actually a 17-inch version. That thing was a monster. They haven't had that for a long time. The biggest they've had recently has been 15-inch. This is 16-inch. Actually, it was a 15.4-inch, so it's not – the screen size isn't that much bigger, but I think the news part of this is that they actually gave up on the – keyboard style that they had been using, the butterfly switch keyboard, which was supposedly revolutionary and had all kinds of issues. A lot of people didn't like it because of the lack of travel on the keys. You couldn't necessarily feel, you know, your touch typist didn't like it because they couldn't feel exactly what key they were on. There wasn't enough distinction, space between the keys. And maybe even more than that, they had all kinds of problems keeping these things working. Stuff would get under the keyboard and it required, you know, taking it into the Apple Store or sending it in to get it fixed. And they just, in fact, still today, if you have one of those keyboards and it stops working, you know, one of the keys or whatever, you can take it in and get it replaced for free, regardless of warranty or Apple Care. But this, they went back to the old style keyboard. They kind of presented it as the new old, but supposedly this is maybe a little bit more reliable, a little bit more travel. The keys are a little bit further apart, and they upgraded the specs and such. But the MacBook Pro is out again, and it's not inexpensive. I think it starts at $2,300. So if you are in need of something like that, get out your checkbook. But that is the news from Apple. And they kind of low-keyed it, which is probably expected since there was so much bad press around the last 3 years of MacBooks. They just kind of wanted to slip this out there and say, come get it. But that's the news from Apple.
All right. We also usually cover a segment called Wells Now. And Martin, you've been writing a little bit lately for Wells Now.
Yes, I released a white paper and a blog post the other day called General Information Security Guidelines. And I get quite a few calls on this, especially over the past year and a half or 2 years. And that's the request usually goes something like, well, what should we be doing to secure the data? How private does it need to be? What do we do with encryption? What do we do about syncing services? And finally, I had some time to create a white paper. And this one basically just goes into, not super detail, but it gives enough information for somebody to get a good start on setting a privacy policy, determining what workflow should be in place to secure data. Should we use things like Jot Forms or Google Forms, those kinds of things? It's kind of in an FAQ type format, so hopefully it's easy to understand, especially for people who don't spend a lot of time in security or privacy or thinking about it. So we'll put a link to this in the show notes, but again, this is just a first stab at it. And again, if you want more information about this kind of thing, there's at least some good links in there. And then the encouragement is to contact me if you've got more questions.
So, yeah, thanks for that heavy lifting. Security these days is not for the faint of heart. And so as a congregation or school, having this resource available to you, I think is pretty valuable.
Again, we'll put a link to that in the show notes. Let me see if I can find my OneNote again here. I should know the order of things by
it's
now,
time
Sally,
for picks
right?
Of the week.
Picks of the week.
And we'll let Jason go first.
Oh, thanks, guys. Mm-hmm. So something that we've been trying, this all started with a request from one of my teachers. She wanted to use Bitmoji with her kids. So, if you're familiar with Bitmoji, that's kind of the Snapchat, customizable avatar kind of, it has the little sayings and stuff like that. And you can put them into, images and they can get thrown into documents and stuff. They're pretty fun little graphics that you can make with that. But what we ran into is this is a middle school teacher and her kids didn't all have Snapchat accounts and we don't allow Snapchat on our network. So we need to come up with an alternative. So I found a website called Pixton.com. It's an online comic creator that lets the kids kind of customize their own avatar. But the really cool thing with it is you can set up a free classroom account, teachers can. And then kids can use each other's avatars in their own comics. So you have an entire roster of kids in the class that you can use to create a comic around any kind of a topic that you want. And the way that they monetize this kind of a service is there's a subscription that you can purchase or content packs that you can purchase as well. You have a limited number of free options, but then, beyond that, you can buy additional packages of content if you'd like. Otherwise, the encouragement that I have been giving my teachers is just set a blank background and then print them off, and then they can draw in the backgrounds for their comics. So Pixton.com is a fun tool that's worth checking out, and you know, I would encourage people to give it a shot and see how they can use it with their kids.
Sounds cool. It. So Jason, Sally, do you have Bitmojis?
I do.
Most certainly do.
As a matter of fact,
I'll send you one to put into the
show notes.
I actually enjoyed 2019 because my Bitmoji got thinner because I lost some weight. Jason, I don't know if you made yours any thinner or not.
I need to go back in and do that.
That was a momentous occasion for me. I have an
Can't
avatar.
Can't you control that anyway?
You can, but I'm an honest gal, so okay. It's accurate.
All right.
But I have a funny avatar story besides that. My son recently got Wheel of Fortune on the Switch, of all things. He thought, Mom likes Wheel of Fortune. This is a game she'll play with me. And so we sat down to play our first ever Wheel of Fortune game, and he had set up his character. And before you knew it, the wrong button got pushed. I'm not taking credit for that, but who knows? Somehow the wrong button got pushed, and all three of the players were the same person. So we played a whole game of Wheel of Fortune with all of us looking identical. It was like we were triplets. So that's a funny story from the Draper.
Notice the family resemblance.
Yeah, yeah, big time. It was hilarious. So,
All right, Sally, you're up.
And
pick of the week.
Going to circle back. I think I talked about this over the last several shows, but I had the privilege of being an online presenter for a virtual conference hosted by the Christ and Media Institute out of Bethany Lutheran College. It's called the Gospel Outreach with Media conference, and they've done it for several years now. And this fall, I wrote about the Glide app, which is a tool for doing a mobile app, and you use Google Sheets to do that. And the format of the conference is that people can then comment, and you have kind of a discussion thread over a period of 3 weeks or so. And many of those that do comment are from high schools and colleges around the synods, Wells and Ells. Which is really neat to get students engaged with some of these ideas for using technology in ministry. I'm very excited by that. And I got some great comments, had some good discussion with people, but one of them really stood out to me. Honestly, I just was thrilled to get this. It's from a student at Divine Savior Lutheran Academy down in Doral, Florida. Her name is Virginia, and she wrote, I'm amazed you're able to make an app from scratch that works on all platforms so easily. It's surprising how much technology has advanced. That now it's so simple to create an app that can truly make a difference. For example, with your app, you were not only able to cut down on paper, but also facilitate the lives of the people attending the summit, which was incredible. That was my sample app from the EdTech Lead Summit. I was just introduced to coding, Virginia says. Computer science, the process of developing an application, it's been about a year or so, and I've completely fallen in love with it. I love how people can use both their creative and logical sides to come up with amazing platforms and apps that are then available to the public through the click of a button. And I'm right there with you. I love the creative and logical sides of things. One struggle that I was presented with is that as a senior in high school, my friends are looking for careers that allow them to share God's word, either directly or indirectly. And, you know, we are so blessed that so many students consider continuing their studies at Martin Luther College, specifically for the public ministry. And I'm guessing that's part of what she's alluding to there. She says, after giving it some thought, I realized doing this through computer science may not be as successful as incorporating a religious message on a movie or in the office. Do you have any advice on how to successfully serve God through the field of computer science? Do you think churches and religious organizations such as youth groups would be willing to incorporate technology and applications into their schedules? And I just was so excited to read this because, of course, my answer to her was absolutely, no matter what your vocation is, there's ways to serve God and share the good news. And certainly, churches would love to have Virginia as a lay member in their congregation willing to do technology projects associated with outreach and such. So that's the gist of what I wrote back to her. I just thought you guys would enjoy and be uplifted by Virginia's perspective as well.
It's neat.
It is.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Our future leaders have a great perspective, and, you know, kind of a whole life perspective, which is kind of neat. It's not just about what's next.
Right.
It's,
I wasn't thinking that when I was her age, I'm pretty
right,
sure.
Right.
So
cool.
Very
Thank
encouraging.
Thank you, Virginia. Nice pick.
Mm-hmm.
My pick of the week is a tool that I've been using a lot lately. I think, Sally, you had a pick a couple weeks back, one of your favorite tools, Snagit, which is from the product line put out by TechSmith. Camtasia is their crown jewel. It's their screencasting software, and I'm still a big fan of that. But my pick of the week is actually a more modest version, not from the same company, but it's called Screencast-O-Matic. I've used this off and on over the years. It is... you can use a web-based version. It does download a little, you know, background app that you can use. But I've been doing a lot of screencasting for the web design class I'm doing for Erie Lutheran High School's online. We're coming to the end of our semester, and I've been redoing all my screencasts using Screencast-O-Matic. One reason I've been trying it is it's simple to use. It's quick to get up. It's not heavy at all, and it's very inexpensive. There's a free version. For the free version, you can record everything that you can for the paid version, but you get a little watermark on it, and you're limited to 15 minutes. You can still upload it. You do have an upload limit to their servers. But one of the nice things about Screencast-O-Matic is you have a lot of choices with what to do with a video. You can record it, but you can and upload it to their servers. But you can also download it or upload it directly to things like Vimeo or YouTube, those kinds of things. And I put all mine on YouTube for this particular class. But I signed up for the solo plan, and there's also educator plans as well, which opens it up to the whole classroom, so you can take a look at that. There's team plans, but the solo plan is only $1.50 a month, and that allows you to have unlimited recording lengths, no watermarks. You can do captions, screenshotting, draw and zoom, scripted recordings, a lot of the things that you can do in Camtasia for a small fraction of the price. And I think the interface is kind of gets out of your way. Camtasia, you've got a lot of different things that you can do with it. It's really a power tool, and sometimes I've used those for those features. But if you're just trying to get something done and some minor editing, and you can bring in other video and audio too, because it does have an editor as well, this really fits the bill. And I think for a lot of people who are doing flipped classroom stuff, this might be a good solution, certainly a cost-effective solution. Or if you're just getting started and want to see if it's for you, this would be a good way to get your, you know, kind of foot in the door and see what it's like. So screencast-o-matic.com. I'm a big fan. I've been really happy with it. It's been rock solid, never had a problem with it in the times that I've used it. And I know that Jim Grunwald up at MLC uses this all the time, as he's the lead for Erie Lutheran High School's online. And even when he was teaching, I think he used it as well. So that is my pick of the week.
Good stuff. Video is so popular, and having tools in your tool belt to make it happen is always good.
Good
idea.
Yep. Next on the docket is our ministry resource. And this came from our good friend Rachel Pearson through
Facebook recommendation.
Facebook. Was this on the... teacher's site? No.
No, actually, I'll look it up and put a link, but there's a new group that I joined recently that's all about using Google tools.
Ah, okay.
It's
okay.
A Facebook group.
Teachers Using Google Suite for Education.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rolls right off the tongue.
She's... it's not even a good acronym, but she says, had a coworker share this extension with me today, and I thought it was neat, so naturally I'm sharing it here. It's called Remote for Slides, and it turns your phone into a presentation remote. You can even see the speaker notes on your device. Check it out. So it's for Google Chrome. It's a Chrome extension. It works with Google Slides, and it basically syncs up your phone with your slides so that you can advance and even preview those slides, as she mentioned. I've tried it a few times. I don't use slides all the time, but when I do, it's sometimes nice to be able to have that remote connection. It does need to, both ends obviously need to be on Wi-Fi. So you have to trust that you've got good Wi-Fi there. It's not a direct connection between your phone and your computer, for instance. But it works pretty well, and it's kind of nice to be able to kind of roam around the room. And it's totally free, and I believe it's made by Google, I want to say. I could be wrong about that, but it works pretty seamlessly. So thank you, Rachel, for sharing that.
And you can give that illusion that while you're presenting, you're also texting.
Right. That's what people want.
That's what I'm always going for, Sally. I don't know what anybody else is, but.
Right. Multitasking.
Community feedback.
Jason, you actually shared a link with us that's kind of a follow-up from the last show that you were on where we talked about some texting bullying that's happening between iPhone and Android users. There's an update on that.
Yeah, Google must have been listening to me because very shortly after we had that conversation, Google rolled out it's called RCS chat. And I forget what RCS stands for, but basically it does the same thing that iMessage does on iPhone. But it's for Android. So, if you have the Android Messages app, there are a couple of just little settings that you need to tweak, and then you too can have the iPhone experience without, having to sell your soul to Apple.
Rich Communication Services is the acronym.
Yes,
and there was just news out, I think, a couple days ago that Google is going to enable this through their Google messaging service. So you don't even have to do the kind of jump through the three hoops that are required to enable it on your phone. So this would be that's one of the requirements. You have to use Google the messaging app. A lot of different Android devices have their own, like Samsung has their own, I forget what it's called, and Motorola has their own or whatever, but you have to use this. And then whoever you're chatting with also has to be using it. So it's, you know, and so correct. I haven't actually even tried it yet. I've got it on my phone, but I haven't seen this. So you get things like the reply function, so you know when somebody's a read receipt, so you know when somebody's read it, or you know when they're typing, higher resolution graphics, those kinds of things. So, the downside is that Apple my guess is that Apple really won't try and integrate with this, but so there still may be that class system, so to speak. Who knows? Maybe we'll all be one big happy chatting family someday in the future. Right?
So Apple to Apple, you have the great experience. Android to Android, you can now have correct. The rich experience, but don't cross the
don't
beams.
Don't cross the beams.
No. Right. So.
Okay.
At least not yet.
Okay.
Anyway. Thank you for that, Jason. Really appreciate it. Video of the week.
We are excited to share a Thanksgiving-themed hymn from our friends at Koine Worship Media. We have Now Thank We All Our God, and this is one of their videos where the lyrics are integrated in it, and that's where their sweet spot is these days. If you are doing worship music projection and are looking for some great resources, certainly Koine Worship Media is worth checking out. They have a subscription system where you can get access to not just lyric videos, but also music scores and all kinds of things that go along with their music. This is just one example and one that's appropriate for Thanksgiving.
Good. Check for that in the show notes. Sally, we're going to do this again in a couple weeks. What are we talking about?
Well, we're going to look at church and school Bible study. We thought with the end of the year, the beginning of the year, many people will be considering how to get people into the Word in the new year. And we actually had someone speak on this at EdTech Lead Summit this summer. One of our Ignite speakers was Principal Brad Gergel from St. Peter, Minnesota. And they have a really unique program that they kicked off this year, kind of a homegrown program, where they're crossing over the school devotional readings for each week to a church Bible reading plan. And Brad's going to give us the details on that. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. So tune in for that in episode 616. 616. Yes. All right. Thank you, Jason, for joining us. Really always enjoy your presence on these podcasts. Thanks for taking the time to do that with us.
Yeah, I appreciate being asked. You guys keep on inviting me back, so I guess it must not be that bad.
No, it's not that bad.
Good.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.